So there are no coincidences in Jewish life or in life anywhere. Someone once said coincidence is just God's way of remaining anonymous, perhaps. So our Torah portion this week comes at the end of the book of Leviticus. It's actually a double portion, Bahar and Bechukotai. Leviticus, the handbook of priests for ancient Israel, so much of the book and much of these sections too is dealt with priestly things and sacrifices and all of those types of details. But there is this interesting element in near the end of Bechukotai where we get almost a tabulation, monetary values for a vow that you might make. I vow that if such and such were to happen, I'll donate this many shekels to the sanctuary, or whatever it may be. But there's a valuation, how much a vow is worth. There's a valuation based in no small part on age and gender, right? Some see it as the relative worth of men and women in the ancient world. We can actually study that another time. But it's not coincidental that the notion of the value of women and their contribution to their congregation happens on this, our sisterhood Shabbat. What we do know is that the women of our congregation and women in Judaism in general are beyond valuation. They are invaluable to the well-being of our community. Here at TBS, we know they work diligently to provide the space for community and for connection and contribute to the well-being of our congregation as a whole. The same is true for all of our people, for all of Judaism throughout all time. Throughout the ages, Jewish women, ancient and modern, biblical and contemporary, have contributed in a myriad of different ways to the well-being of the Jewish people. In manners big and small, in personal connections and public acts, they've played vital roles in our community. So tonight, as part of our Sisterhood Shabbat, we've invited four members of our sisterhood to research and share something about a significant Jewish woman. We used as our research tool a great resource from the Jewish Women's Archive. They have an online encyclopedia of Jewish women. This is not the binders of women from politicians of a few years ago, but rather it is literally thousands of short vignettes or short biographies of a full range of women throughout Jewish history. And so four of our sisterhood members, you guys can come on up, are going to share with us about some women you may know or may not know. Deborah Koblenz will teach us a little bit about Hedy Lamarr. Sandy Adams will tell us about Ida Rosenthal. Marilyn Morrison will tell us about Judy Heumann. And Philippa Hinman is going to talk about Jewish mothers. So we are excited to have the opportunity to learn from you all.
Okay.
We have slides for each of them. There we go.
Hedy Lamarr, often referred to as the most beautiful woman in film, was one of the most popular actresses of her day, as well as a gifted mathematician, scientist, and innovator. Born on November 9, 1914, into a well-to-do Jewish family in Vienna, Austria, she was named Hedwig Eva Kiesler. Her curiosity was encouraged by her father, who discussed the inner workings of machines. At the age of five, she was taking apart and reassembling her music box to learn how it worked. Her brilliant mind was ignored, and at 17, she starred in her first film in Germany. She continued to work on German and Czechoslovakian productions, eventually being noticed by Louis B. Mayer of MGM. Once in Hollywood, she changed her name to Hedy Lamarr and starred opposite leading actors at that time, such as Charles Boyer, Spencer Tracy, Jimmy Stewart, and Clark Gable. For one of her marriages, Lamarr was briefly married to Fritz Mandl, an Austrian munitions dealer. A controlling man, he demanded that she smile and play host for his friends and scandalous business partners, some associated with the Nazi Party. She escaped his grasp, bringing with her knowledge gained from dinner table conversations about wartime weaponry, information that came in handy later. Lamarr dated Howard Hughes, who showed her how airplanes were built in his factories and introduced her to scientists behind the process. Although she had equipment at home, Hughes made a setup for her in her trailer so that she could work on inventions between takes during filming. She created a new wing design for his airplanes by combining the fins of the fastest fish with the wings of the fastest bird. She also created an upgraded stoplight and a cube that dissolved in water to make soda. During World War II, Lamar patented a secret communication system with composer George Eiffel with the goal of defeating the Nazis. Now called frequency hopping, it was designed as a way for radio guidance transmitters and torpedo receivers to jump simultaneously from frequency to frequency. The technology would help guide torpedoes to their targets and prevent enemies from intercepting classified military strategies, signals, and messages. The Navy declined to implement this new system, and the patent expired. However, Lamar's work provided the foundation for today's Wi-Fi, GPS, and Bluetooth communication systems. In 1997, Lamar received the Pioneer Award of the Electronic Foundation and the Invention Convention's Bulby Nass Spirit of the Achievement Award, considered the Oscars of inventing. In 2014, she was inducted posthumously into the National Inventors Hall of Fame for developing the frequency hopping technology. A woman who combined beauty and acting ability with brilliance and innovation, Hedy Lamarr is known to this day, not just for the movie she made, but as a mother of Wi-Fi and a leader before her time in STEM.
I chose Ida Rosenthal because a few things resonated with me about her. First of all, she was a leader and a businesswoman well before her time. And it's something that she was passionate about, and she did it until the day that she died. The other thing that is pretty important to all the women in this room is that she was the developer of the modern brassiere. Something that's pretty important to all of us. So I want to tell you her story. Ida Rosenthal and her husband exemplify the rags to riches success of many Americans. Two Russian immigrants coming to America penniless and becoming very successful. Ida Rosenthal Nee Cohn was born January 9, 1886, near Minsk, Russia. When she was 19, she emigrated to America to follow her boyfriend, William Rosenthal, who had left a few months earlier. After arriving, they were married in 1907. She was a dressmaker, and they decided to form their own business. She handled sales and financial matters, and he oversaw the design and tailoring. They were never satisfied with the way a dress fitted around the bosom. In the 20s, women wore a towel like brassiere with hooks in the back, which didn't flatter their appearance. The Rosenthals felt that a woman paying a minimum of $125 for a custom dress should have it fit well around the bosom. So they spent a lot of time developing and perfecting the brassiere. And you might be familiar with the name of their company, Maidenform. So Maidenform brassieres became a success, with Ida playing an active role in the production and development. In 1928, they gave up the dressmaking business and concentrated only on brassieres. Later, they introduced women's lingerie and swimsuits. During World War II, they had no problem receiving all the material they needed for their products. Studies showed that working women wearing bras were less fatigued than those who didn't. The Maidenform company started out with 10 employees and grew to over 5,000. When her husband died in 1958, Eisen Rosenthal became the chief executive of the company. She moved from her large estate in Long Island to a small apartment in the lower part of Fifth Avenue. She went to her office every day until she died on March 29, 1973, at the age of 87. She served on the board of directors of the Bronx Lebanon Medical Center for many years. She and her husband established the Ida and William Rosenthal Fellowship in Judaica and Hebraic at New York University. They donated Camp Lewis in Sussex County, New Jersey, to the Boy Scouts of America in memory of their son, Lewis, who died while a student at Columbia University. Ida Rosenthal will always be an inspiration and a model for Jewish women wanting to be owners or executives in business. Ida Rosenthal showed that it can be done if you work hard at it.
I chose Judy Heumann. Judy Heumann was an American disability rights advocate known as the mother of disability rights movement. She was recognized internationally as a leader in the disability community. Heumann was a lifelong civil rights advocate for people with disabilities. Her work with governments and non-governmental organizations, nonprofits, and various other disability interest groups produced significant contributions since the 1970s to the development of human rights legislation and policies benefiting children and adults with disabilities. Through her work in the World Bank and the State Department, Heumann led the mainstreaming of disability rights into the international development. Her contributions extended the international reach of the independent living movement. Heumann was born in Philadelphia to Werner and Elise Heumann, who were German Jewish immigrants. Heumann was the oldest of three children, and she grew up in Brooklyn. Her mother came to the US from Germany in 1935, while her father came in 1934. Heumann's grandparents, great-grandparents, and many other family members were killed in the Holocaust. In 1970, Heumann was denied her New York teaching license because the board did not believe she could get herself or her students out of the building in case of a fire due to her needing to use a wheelchair. She sued the Board of Education on the basis of discrimination. The case settled without a trial, and Heumann became the first wheelchair user to teach in New York City and taught elementary school there for 3 years. In 1977, Heumann helped organize protests that ultimately led to the implementation of Section 504 of the Rehab Act, which outlawed discrimination against disabled Americans by any institutions receiving federal funding. That law laid the groundwork for the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act, or as we know it, the ADA, which expanded those protections to other parts of public life. Washington, D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty appointed Heumann as the city's first director for Department on Disability Services, where she was responsible for the Developmental Disability Administration and the Rehabilitation Services Administration. Heumann served in the Clinton administration as Assistant Secretary of the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation Services at the United States Department of Education from 1993 to 2001. And from 2002 to 2006, Heumann served as the World Bank Group's first advisor on disability and development, leading the World Bank's work on disability and work to expand the bank's knowledge and capability to work with governments and civil society on including disability and bank discussions with client countries. Its country-based analytical work and support for improving policies, programs, and projects that allow disabled people around the world to live and work in the economic and social mainstream of their communities. Because of Judy Heumann, the following legislation was enacted in order for people living with disabilities to live a life like ours: the American Disabilities Act, the Federal Rehabilitation Act, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And she was active within the independent living movement, which enables people living with significant disabilities to have choices other than simply living out their lives in nursing facilities. According to Ms. Heumann, disability only becomes a tragedy for me when society fails to provide the things we need to lead our lives. Job opportunities or barrier-free buildings, it's not a tragedy to me that I'm living in a wheelchair. I had the great honor of spending a lot of time with Judy. I met her often, and she had tenacity and the passion that I try to bring to my world every day as a disabilities advocate. An unstoppable force of nature that will feed you, pamper you, and pester you at the slightest provocation, known to spout Yiddish randomly. Be warned, if you come to her house, you will leave with a full stomach and a bag of leftovers. Does this sound like anyone you know? It's the Urban Dictionary definition of the Jewish mother. Now, if I haven't made enough food to feed a small army, as my father used to say, and I don't send you home with food, I haven't done my job. However, you do not need to be a mother, nor Jewish, to fit the definition of a Jewish mother. You simply need to care and want the best for those around you. As we celebrate our mothers and the people who have raised us this weekend, let's talk a little bit about what makes a Jewish mother, beyond thinking of someone who will do anything to assist her child or children in any area of that child's life, often at another person's peril. With recognition to Barbara Greenberg, PhD in Psychology Today in March 2016, here are some of the reasons why we all want and need Jewish mothers in our lives. Turned out to be a top 10, although I didn't plan it that way. Number one, Jewish mothers are not afraid to express their love loudly, proudly, and often. Number two, Jewish mothers feed their children and everyone else around them. You should never go hungry. Have some chicken soup. Think, eat, booby, eat. Number three, Jewish mothers care. They are interested and invested in their children's lives. No one can ever accuse them of being detached. Meddling, schmeddling, it's really just love. Number four, Jewish mothers encourage their children to ask questions. Now, this has both positive and negative outcomes. Our children continually question us and want to know why. Why we have made certain decisions. Why we are making them do things. At the same time, they are independent thinkers and doers. Number five, education is important. All children should have a good education, and the Jewish mother will make sure it happens from preschool through graduate school and beyond. Need I say more? Number six, family is of the utmost importance. The Jewish mother is present and will attend to your physical and emotional needs. As I said before, chicken soup is life and heals all that ails, and you should take some home. Number seven, you can be sure that your mother has thoroughly researched anyone who will come near you. Again, think the importance of education and credentials. Number eight, the Jewish mother is very detailed oriented. Do you have lists or calendars? Do you take copious notes? Thank your mother. Number nine, Jewish mothers teach about taking care of others. Just like you should never be cold or hungry, no one else should either. And number 10, Jewish mothers are extremely generous with their children. Your mother will go to the ends of the earth to make sure you have what you need and what you want. So now, think about your life outside of your family. Do you have a friend who has everything that you could ever need or want? A Band-Aid, snacks, Tylenol, tissues, the Mary Poppins bag. That's the Jewish mother of your friend group. Do you have a coworker who is always at the ready? They easily lend a hand, answer a question, mentor you, have snacks or sweets at their desk, have extra supplies of materials. That's the Jewish mother at work. Best of all is your own mother, who is available anytime, day or night. Have you ever been called at 1 a.m. by your child who is in a different state and needs directions to get to the hotel? Honestly, it matters not that you were sound asleep when the phone rang, nor that Google Maps was not a thing. I sprang into action, I saved the day, and my child made it to her hotel along with her car and her group of friends. Now, don't even get me started on Jewish grandmothers. Do you want to see photos of my grandchildren?
What is your Jewish mother's story?
We thank Deborah and Sandy, Marilyn and Philippa for teaching us, for sharing with us, for seeing just a few of the many, many ways that Jewish women play a role for us all. An offering from our friend Beth Schaefer. Even as Jewish women have long brought merit to our people, may we always merit to have such women among us and always recognize their contributions as well. King Yehi Ratzon, may this be God's will. And together we say,
Amen.